Hey everyone, it's Greg with Aquapour. I'm here with Josh, our product engineer, and we're getting together today to give you all a quick update and just kind of talk about progress over the last couple weeks on our permeable concrete technology. Josh, how are you?
I'm doing good. It's a little chilly out here in Spokane, but we love it.
Yeah, it is definitely winter is lurking here. So let's talk about, we did our live event a couple weeks ago, and we kind of laid out the plan for the next really 6 to 12 months. But let's get more granular and talk like the next 3 months. But even before we get into that, let's talk about just small, which actually is very big progress for us, but some of the small process tweaks that we've made just the last 2 weeks to get a final product that's ready to go in the ground.
So on the processing side, the finishing side, and the making side, basically we've got a mix design dialed in now where we can have reproducibility and we can control the type of product we're going to have. Because like we've said before, we have kind of a suite of products. It's going to depend on the application. But one of the recent advancements we've made has to do with the actual finish of the product, and it's to increase water flow by breaking up surface tension.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I want to dive into this because one thing about this technology I think that's unique that we've talked about before is the pore size. And this product is more like a hardscape filter than anything else. And so a lot of times people ask, you know, what's the difference between Aquapour's material and say pervious concrete or porous asphalt, these other solutions that have been out there? They're not widely used because they are prone to clogging. They clog up very easily. So talk to all of us a little bit about the pore size and first of all, how small it is and what that means. Give us some context maybe.
So our pore size is, I say 10 microns minus because we've got a range, but you're looking at about 10 microns is going to be the largest pore size in our material. And if you guys are familiar with capillary action, that has to do with the hydrogen interactions on the inside of surfaces with water. And so water can actually move energy free. It's how trees get water all the way up to the top without spending any energy. So because our pores are small enough that water can interact with the edges pretty well, we get capillary action. Now, that's a good thing, but the downside is when you add in surface tension. So surface tension is the stickiness of water. The water wants to hold itself together. That's why it forms droplets and a meniscus on the edge of a glass. So the bottom of our brick, we're using gravitational forces to help move the water through as well as capillary forces. But when the whole brick is saturated and you get a net, a web of water in there interacting, it becomes so sticky just by holding on to itself that gravity is not enough to break that netting. So we use a coarse finish to disrupt the interaction of the water molecules and kind of break them into smaller sample sizes. And then there is a net reduction in the surface tension, and that equates to a better flow.
Yeah, higher flow rates. So everyone, you just got a nice little science deep dive. But I think now framing this in the context of going to market and what this means, this is, if it is like a hardscape filter, what we're looking at is different ways that we can implement this within existing paved infrastructure. So instead of replacing like a whole street, for example, or even a whole sidewalk section, you could have this in different areas in a design that takes on water, but it doesn't have to be, you know, the whole paved surface. Is that correct?
That's correct. The flow rate, preliminary flow rates that we are seeing with the product, you wouldn't need to replace the entire hard surface. You would need to replace a percentage of that hard surface. And ideally, you would put it into a high water traffic zone, so you would maximize the amount of water going through it and also maximize its filtration capabilities on that water going through it.
Yeah. It is a very interesting technology in that from that standpoint. So as we look ahead, we were in late November going into early December now. What is the plan, do you think, for the next month in terms of product development?
So right now we're in the final stages. We've got the whole process down and it's repeatable and we have a solid product at the end of it. So now we're going to slowly start scaling up, doing larger pours. We've got a lot of different types of molds right now, but we're trying to focus on our key interlocking pavers and a 12 by 12 paver just because those are very commonly used in the paver world.
Yep.
So we want to start with general and then we'll work our way up. But getting to the point where we can do multiple pours on the same day, that's coming up here soon. And just being able to handle large batches and control the base, all the details of it.
Because
right now we're doing micro scale and now we've scaled up. But to go to the next scale, you got to have quality control checks. And that's what I've been developing is all these quality control checks so that when somebody else is going to make this, they can do it right every single time. And it's not rocket science, but there is some tricks to it.
Yeah, it's hard work. It's exciting. We're very excited internally here about the progress we've made and where we're going with this. We do have plans to get maybe a couple small sample demonstration projects in the ground that we'll do on our own before we go out and take on our first projects. But we do, our sales funnel or our project funnel is filling up. And so that's something that we take very seriously, obviously, before you go into any of these larger scale projects, having everything dialed in. And so very excited about the next several weeks.
Getting these micro projects in the ground this winter, just so we can see what winter does to them, assess the flow, assess the strength, freeze thaw sort of issues. That's going to be big for us. And so I'm looking forward to getting that done. We've got our private paver expert and he's ready to go. So
yep.
I'm going to start making the material to get the first one of those projects in the ground early next week, ideally. And then we'll just keep pumping away at that.
Yep. Yeah, it's exciting. We've gotten some inquiries too over the last week or so that are bigger potential strategic opportunities with different entities, whether they're, you know, in heavy civil contracting or engineering. And so we're looking very closely at those. And, you know, we just want to be clear with everyone that before we go to market and take on these first projects, we want to have all our ducks in a row, because obviously you get kind of one shot when you go out. And so when we go out and do that, we want to make sure that we launch properly. And so very excited about the next couple of weeks.
And kind of to that tune, as the scientist on board, you have to do it wrong before you know that the way you're doing it is right. I know that kind of sounds backwards, but that's why we've tried so many different things and we've had a ton of success. We've learned a bunch, but you learn the most from your failures. And we've got a big list of those, and we've taken it down to where there's not really much else that can fail. Now we're feeling confident because, like Greg said, as soon as you go to market and people start asking if you can't supply that,
yep,
you've lost customers, and we want to avoid that.
Yep. There's a lot of infrastructure, I guess, operational infrastructure that we're getting put into place that is very important. And that all happens kind of behind the scenes, but we want to give everyone a feel for how we're going about this. And you're exactly right. I mean, once you go to market, you want to be almost perfect when you're dealing with, you know, the physical world, obviously, and heavy civil contracting. So looking forward to, again, these next couple of weeks as we start churning out more product.
I wish I brought an example here just to kind of hit home that capillary action that I was describing and then how it relates to the size of the tube or pour that the water's moving through. But if you guys get a 1-inch straw, a 1/2-inch straw, and a 1/4-inch straw, and you put them in a glass of water, the skinnier straw is going to have water farther up it. That's because the smaller the pore size, the more interaction with the hydrogen bonds in the side of the vessel or tube or pore that the water has. Thus, it can climb higher for no energy. So because our pores are 10 microns less, we get a huge interaction with water. And that's going to be big for pulling water even when the surface is slightly covered with suspended solids, mud, dirt. I mean, obviously, if you put a plastic bag on there, plastic bag's going to stop it. But that's why this filter is unique. When you're doing extremely small filtration in biology, for example, you're using filters that are so small that liquids can't actually move through them because of the tension of water. So you have to apply a vacuum to it in order to, say, filter some cell culture media or something like that. And we are in between that size range. So if we put a vacuum on the bottom, yeah, it would go faster and you would get this incredible filtration. But by breaking up the surface tension with a coarse finish, we make it so gravity can give that little extra push and start pulling water through. And then when the brick is actually laid in the ground, it's going to interact with all the substrate. And we could get into water potential, but depending on what that substrate is, you're going to create a gradient, and then the flow starts and it continues, kind of like a siphon. Once the flow is going, you have no resistance and the water is going to move freely. And so a couple of the things that we've really been trying to dial in is how to get that flow started quickly and how to maintain that flow in like a big storm event. And we've got all that dialed in now. So I'm feeling really good about the flow testing and the filtration testing.
Yep. It's a big deal because these other incumbent technologies, these other permeable technologies, they've never been able to claim anything close to filtration. And so there's some testing we're going to do later. It's pretty expensive, but it's going to be well worth it. I think there's a great ROI on doing that. Through state entities that basically prove the water quality after it goes through the material. And by being able to filter total suspended solids, which we've talked about before, a lot of pollutants and even dissolved metals and, you know, zinc and phosphorus and things like this attached to total suspended solids.
PCBs,
another thing we're going to look at. And so if you're filtering that material on the top, then, you know, it's a whole different animal, because now it just comes down to how often you maintain that piece of the, you know, infrastructure. And even keeping that in mind, you know, we understand that there's certain developers and cities that are not going to maintain it routinely. We've created our product with service factors to know that even if it gets down to 10 inches or 5 inches of permeability per hour, you're still able to take on a 100-year storm event. And so that's very important as well.
Yeah, I was already going to ask, like, that was going to be the question about the filtration and like other permeable options. I was at Finch Arboretum last week and we were walking around there. And then in the front of the park, there's a little sign that said they're like that they work with, they have permeable
asphalt
there. And they were, it's like they're highlighting it. And I was like, oh, is this, I didn't know if it was. I don't think it's you. I don't think it's Aquapor. But then I was just thinking, when you've been talking about the filtration and like, do other permeable surfaces like not do filtration? Is it just like, it just lets water pour through it? And it's just, there's, that's the benefit of those versus yours is like literally taking out bad stuff. I mean, for lack of a better term.
Yep. You're exactly right. And so really when we started developing the technology, what we knew was we needed a product that was permeable, obviously. It had to be strong and durable. But the main thing, and I think the Achilles heel for these other permeable technologies, is the fact that they clog up very quickly. Mm. The problem is not only does the surface clog up, but then it gets into the subgrade and the substrate, and that clogs up. And so for our technology, you know, you're filtering onto the surface. If over time it clogs up, the other advantage is it's all precast and it's very easy to just rip up and replace, and it's pretty low cost to do so. Mm. And so we think that's kind of the I don't want to say the holy grail, but it's something that we think gives us a major competitive advantage over those other technologies.
Absolutely.
Because in that sort of event, you're replacing a filter, not replacing the entire system. You don't gunk up the whole system downstream. You keep it all locked in and above. You know, some of it will get into the paver eventually, and that will contribute to the clogging, but those are lifespan issues.
Yep.
You pull that whole thing out, you throw it away, and you replace it, and there's nothing below. So one of the examples in Spokane here, we do have railroads, but the PCB contamination from the railroads, we also have a beautiful river. We're lucky here in Spokane, but a lot of those PCBs are on the top of the hill and the river is on the bottom of the hill. So every time it rains, when rainwater moves down the hill, it's dragging PCBs with it.
Yep.
You could use aquaphor as a filtration buffer on the side of the hill. And as the water goes through it, it clogs it up, fills it up with the total suspended solids, which are carrying those PCBs. And then you can take that contaminated filter and you can throw it in the garbage. This is what you do with filters. You throw them in the garbage when they clog and you put a new one in. And so that's a great local application.
Yeah. Keep those chemicals out of main bodies of water, obviously. And that's kind of our whole mission, right? Is to keep water systems clean. And there's a lot of different ways we can do that. I think the other thing to think about now, I want to talk flow rates for a second. What do you think the upper limit of our flow rate will be with this technology?
25 inches an hour all day long for upper rates. Just like permeable asphalt and concrete, the more porous you make it, the less strength you have just physically.
Yep.
And so depending on the amount of water you're foreseeing, or if it's put in a high traffic zone where it needs more strength, you're going to have to cater that. But I think the state minimums for being considered a filter product, if we're at 15 inches an hour, we're well above that.
Yeah.
And there's other products that are already out there that are doing less than 15 inches an hour, and they have to replace them all the time because they clog. So
yeah. And then you start thinking about big rain events, 100-year, you know, storm events, where that's obviously more than enough, you know, permeability. Now at scale, obviously, and you're taking on water from other areas, but this is certainly something that you know, would be able to hold up in the event that you have a very large, you know, rainstorm. So it's just all about optimizing now. And so that's kind of where we're at. Anything else before we go? We gave them kind of a deep dive.
Oh, yeah, a little deep dive, no pun intended.
Yeah.
The other thing, it's a filter, water passes through it, but it's also a water storage vault at the end of the day as well. So beyond water going through it and it filters, say you had a big storm event. I think last time I had a half of a 12 by 12 here, but that half of a 12 by 12 can hold 1.3 liters of water before water starts coming out the bottom. So there's storage vaults on top of that, micro storage vaults, kind of like the ones we have down by the river, and then they can slowly release the water over time. So even if the substrate backed up in a once in a decade event, you would still keep a lot of water in our material and prevent that from going into the gray water infrastructure. So yep. It's got a dual purpose.
And preventing localized flooding at some level.
Yep.
Yep. Well, that's awesome. We're going to do a live event in a couple weeks. Everyone stay tuned. We'll keep updating you as we make progress. But Josh, thanks. I thought this was good. And we kind of give everyone some flavor as to what we're up to. And we'll keep doing these.
Yeah, it's always fun getting to know you guys.
Yeah.
Bring on the questions.
Yeah.